Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Pleasant good afternoon to you, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can find us anytime on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at Steve Jones PSU. And if you miss any of our live shows, you can always go to our podcast page at stevejonesshow.com. I had a chance to speak with Bucknell head coach Joe Susan yesterday as the Bison now are into the bye week before they move on to Holy Cross coming up a week from Saturday. And of course, all the Bucknell games can be heard on the Bison Sports Network flagship, Eagle 107 at 107.3. Coming up later today on the Steve Jones Show, we'll be joined by Pittsburgh Post-Gazette longtime Steelers beat reporter, but also a golf reporter too, Jerry Dulac, who wrote a phenomenal column this morning in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on the legendary Arnold Palmer. So we're looking forward to hearing from Jerry at 4:35 today.
The Trobe Zone.
Yes, sir.
The memorial service is a week from today. At St. Vincent College. Now you have Jerry, right?
Yes, sir. 4:35, you betcha.
And we're going to have Guy Cipriano on today. Who writes for PGA Magazine. Same topic, but also on the Ryder Cup, too. And a little on Penn State football recruiting with Ryan Snyder today. So there we go. We'll bring it back. A well-rounded show. I understand that the standings have taken a disgusting turn.
Oh, you're talking about the picks.
Yes.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I didn't have really all that good of a weekend either, and neither did Kevin, so... But, yeah, we went 3-5. You went 2-6. So now it's a three-game lead that Kevin and I have on you. But it's still early. It's still early. So I knew I wasn't going to go 7-1 two straight weeks.
This isn't a wellness center, so you don't have to really, you know, okay? Don't worry about it. I mean, really.
Season doesn't end this weekend. Plenty of time. You'll get there. I know you're going to. It's only three games back. Not 13.
I'll win by 8 games somewhere. Or I'll lose by 8 games.
But your brother is right, though. I mean, it's just, you pull your hair out trying to figure out these NFL games just with the fact of every game. You know, you got these turning point 3-4 plays a game that can really swing it and make a difference.
Did Lawrence like the promo this morning?
Oh, yeah. He got a good kick out of that.
I told my wife, and she says, how could you do that? I'm like, I said, come on.
I don't associate you and the channel Bravo. That's, you know, what can I say? You know?
Well, I figured I'd pick one out.
Right.
It was my choice between that, Hallmark, Lifetime. Although, I will admit this. Okay, I will admit this. Right? I do enjoy some of the Christmas movies on Hallmark.
Yeah, they'll start. They started last year on Halloween, believe it or not.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
They don't waste any time. Oh. Hallmark Channel's on in my place a lot, too. My wife loves the Golden Girls. Oh, my God. Every weekend, they'll run a 3-4 hour loop of Golden Girls.
Yeah, that's 3 or 4 hours more than I can take.
it is a funny show, but I'll watch one here and there, but I can't go that long watching.
I saw a couple the first time through. That was pretty much enough. That was good. But, yeah, I'll watch a few of the Hallmark Christmas movies. You know, they all end the same. I got it. But, you know, you want a break from sports. I was asked today by somebody how much football I watch on the weekend. Now, I was thinking more Sunday, you know, Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, and I said, well, this weekend, I said, I didn't really watch much because the bus got lost on the way to the airport. Please don't ask me how.
Yes, this was the after-the-show discussion you and I had.
Okay.
Even Jack suggested, you know, your middle three initials should be GPS. You could go right up there to the bus driver.
Oh, I'd start. I made my way up to the front. We'll leave it at that. All right. See the blue lights over there? We may want to attempt that direction. So we got back later, and I listened to a little bit of the Stanford-UCLA game on the radio. Then when I got home, I watched the last 6 minutes of the game. I did not watch a game after that. And, of course, I watched no games before I went over either because we left the hotel at 12:20. I watched a little bit of the Michigan State-Wisconsin game in the booth. I watched a little bit of the Iowa-Rutgers game in the booth, but that was it. Sunday, you know, okay, Sunday was I cut the lawn, I fertilized the lawn, and I replaced the shower head. Okay, so I didn't watch much of the, and I spent the morning. Now, the morning I spent prepping the Minnesota game. So I got all the Minnesota prep done in the morning. Then in the afternoon, I cut the lawn, then I fertilized the lawn, then I replaced the shower head. And then I went and I played 9 holes of golf, and then I went over to football practice. And I did not want to see the Cowboys and the Bears. I mean, there's no. So, no. Now, this week will be a little different. Well, up to a point. I have to make a speech to the Pennsylvania Petroleum Association tomorrow night. And there are no games tomorrow anyway. I then have to emcee the State of Excellence with Kale Sanderson, Erica Tombach, Wes Golan, Katie Daly at the stadium from 7:15 to 8 after the talk show tomorrow night. So it's going to be a tight window. I've got to do the show with James, do the pregame show with James, then do this thing at 7:15. So I got to do all that. Then what's the Thursday game this week? Is this an NFL Network only game?
It's NFL Network only, correct.
Okay. It's got to involve the Browns, right? No, I'm just kidding.
believe it or not, no.
Oh, what?
I know.
Well, what's the college game Thursday?
I don't know if there's one Thursday, but Friday, you know, Friday night, you got the big game. You got Stanford-Washington Friday night.
Well, see, now see that I'll watch. I will watch Friday's game, and then Penn State's playing Saturday at 3:30. I'll watch the night games when I get home. When it's home, I have plenty of time. I can put my feet up on a Saturday night and watch games. Then I'll probably do a lot of nothing on Sunday.
The Thursday night college game is Connecticut and number 6 Houston. That's Thursday night.
Maybe I'll install a faucet. No. You're impressed about the shower head, I can tell.
I am. Oh, by the way, the Thursday night NFL Network only game is Miami and Cincinnati.
I'll install 2 faucets. but Friday I'll watch that game. Saturday I'll get home, I'll watch the Saturday night game when I get back. Whatever game happens to be, the SEC game or whatever. Is good.
You got Louisville Clemson. I believe that's the primetime Saturday night game.
I'll absolutely watch that game. Yeah, I want to see the Louisville quarterback play. I want to see Watson play. And then Sunday I'll watch a lot of NFL because I don't have to do all the stuff I did this week. You know, I won't have to winterize the lawn. I won't have to install a shower head, whatever. I'm just going to be able to kick back, get ready for Maryland, and watch some games. Then the weekend after is Maryland. Same story. It's a noon game. And then the weekend after is a bye week. And
Christmas decorations?
No. No, not going to do it. It's a little different process now.
Gotcha.
I tore out all the front bushes a year ago and opened up the entire front. So it's much easier now. It literally takes me half an hour to do the whole thing now. So I can do that in the morning before I go to work. But that bye week, I mean, it'll be, go out, get some pumpkins, get some apples, you know, whatever, then watch some games. So, I mean, that's what I'll do. You know, harass my brother, something. I'm trying to get him to come down to a game. Will you tell him when you talk to him?
Okay.
Which game is he coming down to?
I will find out. I'll ask him.
I mean, I've been trying to get him to get out of there and get down here. He has more fun doing the pick'em thing than anything he does all week. You know what?
We're having a blast with this. Oh, it's been fun.
I mean, he looks forward to it all the time. You know? And, of course, the little zingers he throws at me, I think he lives for that. Hey, our congratulations, by the way, to Jennifer Wakeman, my golf partner, who is also one of the nicest people on the planet, turned in a round, one of the two best rounds of her life last weekend on the golf course. So congrats. I am thrilled for her. She is a permanent member of our Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament team.
The golf lessons are paying off big time.
I'm thrilled for her because, you know how highly I think of Jen to begin with. I think Brad plays golf too, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't Brad play? Brad plays, right?
Yeah.
Her husband?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they went back down home to West Virginia over the weekend. She had a golf lesson, immediately went out and shot, and was able to keep it under triple digits. Very impressive.
Very impressive is right, because I think both her parents play, right?
Yes.
And you know, that's great. So, hey, way to go, Jen. Congrats. That is terrific. All right. You know, we've rambled on about a few things. There's a lot of Penn State football stuff we got to get to. We had his press conference today. We'll talk about that in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Great to have you with us. Guy Cipriano will be joining us. Right, it's for the PGA Tour. He'll be joining us today. We'll talk a little bit about Arnold Palmer, a little bit about the Ryder Cup, Ryan Snyder on recruiting, and then Terry Dulac from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Wow, what he wrote today. Whoa. And Palmer, incredible. Really very special. And then we'll ask about the Steelers as well. The Steelers, you and I were talking in the break, they have been brutal so far. I don't understand what I'm watching with them.
Tackling has been, you know, not good at all. Shazier is definitely not playing at 100%.
He got hurt again during the game.
Yeah, and he was in and out, and at least five guys get hurt. Lawrence Timmons had to go to the hospital, so it shall be interesting with this guy in the stands Sunday night for Steelers Chiefs. And I kept saying during the game, it's like, okay, they're down 30. It's let's get Ben out of there. I'm not going to Sunday night's game to see Landry Jones play four quarters.
Oh. Wow.
But I kind of wonder with Marcus Wheaton, that was his first whiff of play this season. And just think if he would have caught that touchdown pass, if that may have at least stemmed the tide for a little while.
Well, Smith would have made the final 34-10. Yeah.
Well, I'm watching the game, and it's, you know, that third and eight play, third quarter, and I said to my wife, they got to get a stop here. Steelers get the ball back and score, or they've got literally no shot. And lo and behold, that was the Darren Sproles 75-yard catch and run and ball game.
Right.
But you're right. Ben has been barely good, absolutely not great so far.
Right. Yeah.
And Lev Bell's back, and we shall see.
Jerry Dulac, this is what he wrote about Arnold Palmer today. He spent 28 years around him. What I realized about my time around Arnold Palmer, 28 years to be exact, was not necessarily the moments I enjoyed as a professional interviewing and writing about the man who changed the way the game was viewed around the world. Instead, it dawned on me how easy it was to take his immense presence for granted because of how easy he made everyone around him feel. It dawned on me how lucky I was to be around him in the settings where he is most comfortable, and it was nothing for him to make sure you felt the same. How about that? Thought of the time 2 years ago when he waited in the pro shop to say hello when he heard I was stopping over from training camp in Latrobe. What does that tell you? The years you're going to go over and play over at the country club, you know, because he lived in Latrobe. I mean, you know, sure, he had spent a lot of time in Orlando, too, in the winters, but still. May 2009, when I made my second hole-in-one at the 10th hole at Latrobe Country Club, he was sitting behind the green near the halfway house and did more than just congratulated. He proceeded to the pro shop and announced to the staff I had a hole-in-one. Imagine that, Arnold Palmer. Amazing. All right, we'll have Jerry on in an hour. That's going to be a special time. Then we'll talk about the Steelers. So he'll regale us in great Arnold Palmer stories and then go 180 and try to tell us anything positive about the Steelers. Guy Cipriano, next half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history. 1923, Lou Gehrig of the Yankees hit the first of his 493 career home runs. 1930, Hack Wilson of the Cubs hit two home runs, giving him 56 for the year. That was the National League record until it was surpassed by Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa in 98. He also drove in 190 runs that year, a record that I don't think is going to be broken. 1930, at the annual NHL governor's meeting, a new rule was passed concerning offsides. The rule was that the puck must be propelled into the attacking zone before any player of the attacking side can enter the zone. 1953, the St. Louis Browns played their final game before moving to Baltimore to become the Orioles. 1964, Houston played its final game at Colts Stadium. They lost 1-0 to the Dodgers in 12, moved to the Astrodome that year, and the Houston Colt 45s became the Houston Astros. 1983, Larry Bird signed a 7-year contract with the Celtics worth $15 million, worth every dime, people. 1996, Barry Bonds of the Giants became the second player in Major League Baseball history with 40 home runs and 40 stolen bases. The other was Jose Canseco. 1998, Mark McGwire set a Major League record when he hit his 70th homer of the season. Sammy Sosa finished with 66 home runs, both surpassing Roger Maris. 1999, the last game played at Tiger Stadium. The Tigers beat the Royals 8-2. 2000, they moved into Comerica Park. And in 2009, the Lions beat the Redskins to end a 19-game losing streak dating back to December 2007. Wow. Went 0-16 1 year. All right, let's bring in Guy Cipriano, PGA Turf Magazine, on the life of Arnold Palmer and other items. Guy, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, good to be with you, Steve. I wish we were discussing the Ryder Cup this week instead of what we're about to be discussing, though.
We'll get to that in a little bit, but let's talk about Arnold Palmer for a moment. Do the players of today earn the purses they get if there is no Arnold Palmer?
I mean, absolutely not. Those hypothetical questions, Steve, are always difficult to answer because who knows who else might have come along and embraced the role that Arnold Palmer, you know, held for, geez, over 50 years. But it's highly unlikely that, you know, Rory McIlroy was playing for $11.5 million on the day that Arnold Palmer died if Arnold Palmer didn't come along. I mean, this is really the first sports superstar who found a way to become bigger than sports and found a way to make a lot of money for himself and for the others in his sport because of what he meant outside the ropes and not on the golf course. I mean, he was the most marketable athlete of his era, and you can make the argument that maybe he's the most marketable athlete of any era. I mean, last year, 2015, he made over $40 million in endorsements, Steve, and that was, you know, really 11 years after he played his last shot at the Masters, which he kind of prolonged longer than, you know, another athlete would. And that was, you know, he's making that $40 million 21 years after he played his last shot at the U.S. Open. And he played his last shot at the U.S. Open when he was 65 years old. So I'm not sure we're ever going to see anything like Arnold Palmer again, who had such lasting power from a marketing standpoint. And, Steve, there's not a person who, at least I have never heard one negative thing about him. I mean, I'm thinking about the industry that I am. I'm in the golf industry, and you hear stories about a lot of people behind the scenes, and, you know, sometimes the public persona doesn't really match what that person is like privately and how he or she treats other people. But Arnold Palmer is one of those people where the stories that you hear from everyone else match the public persona, and you can't say that about really many celebrities, if any at all.
Interesting, because Ben Hogan had been really the king of golf in the 50s, and he was never kind to Arnold Palmer. In fact, he never referred to Palmer by name. He always referred to Palmer as fella. What was it about Arnold Palmer that allowed him to embrace and then have a lifelong friendship with Jack Nicklaus, who was his chief rival?
I think it has everything to do with his upbringing, Steve. I mean, you think about the part of the country that he's from, Western Pennsylvania. Well, heck, you know, that's where I'm from, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are from there. There's nothing really comes easy if you're from Western Pennsylvania, maybe more so now, but when you were growing up in Western PA in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, you know, a completely different Western PA than it is now. And I also think his father raised him that way. I mean, he's the son of not only a golf pro, but Deacon Palmer was also the golf course superintendent at Latrobe Country Club. And that was interesting for Arnold growing up in that environment because his father was working there all the time. And Arnold obviously spent a lot of time there, but he was never one of the members. He was never one of the privileged kids or the kids that, you know, had things easy. He had to work and scrap for everything that he had. And that's not to say Ben Hogan didn't either. Ben Hogan had a rough Texas upbringing, but he's just a completely different personality. I mean, you talk about Ben Hogan, and Ben Hogan was very introverted. Arnold Palmer was extroverted, and just two completely different people. But I think a lot of Arnold Palmer's marketability and the way he treated people stems from his upbringing and just the way his father and mother brought him along and the part of the world that he came from.
He had certain standards along the way. One of them was that if you signed your name, make sure it's readable. He signed a lot. Also, every letter that was ever sent to him happens to be in that barn in Latrobe. All of them. What does it tell you about? Sometimes Vin Scully made a statement the other day, which I thought was tremendous. In reality, I needed you more than you needed me. Could we say that maybe about Arnold Palmer, that when you hear stories like that, that maybe he needed the public more than they needed him?
Yeah, it's just one of those explainable things. It's one of those special personalities. I mean, it's a personality that we'll probably never see again. And think of how many people wanted a piece of Arnold Palmer, Steve. I mean, I went to the 94 U.S. Open at Oakmont, and there were literally thousands of people following him. And even after one of the most emotional rounds of his life, he sat there and signed autographs for a long, long time. And then 2 years later, my father took me to the U.S. Senior Open at Canterbury Golf Club here in the Cleveland area, and it wasn't quite the scene it was at Oakmont. Obviously, that was an emotional day, and the last time he ever played a course that he wanted to win at desperately in a competitive round, and the last time, really, he played a huge tournament in front of his own people. But the situation in Cleveland 2 years later was the same. I mean, he just sat there and signed for everybody. I remember he signed a baseball card for me that day, and he just didn't turn down any request, and You're right. That's amazing. I mean, think of the volume of materials that must have come to his office in Latrobe. And it's not like he worked in a secluded place. It's not like he's one of these golfers who goes to Bermuda or, you know, a gated community in Florida to spend most of his time. Everybody knew where his office was. Everybody knew where Latrobe Country Club was. Everybody knew how to reach him. Everybody knew who to go to if you had to reach him quickly. This was about as accessible as a sports superstar will ever come. We'll never see, you know, I keep on repeating this, we'll never see anything like it again. Another one that, you know, another lesson he imparted on a lot of people is leave the golf course better than you found it. What a great lesson in a sport where the playing surface is conditioned, sometimes relies on the participants to take care of it after they play their shot. And really, you could say he also left the earth better than he found it, too, because of his actions. I mean, this is truly a remarkable person. And I think given the way things are today, there's never going to be anything like him again, with the accessibility and the humanity, and also the way he was just genuine all the time.
Early on in his life, he won a couple of tournaments here on the Penn State White course. A lot of people, I don't think, realize that.
Yep, two state titles.
Yep, and also along the way, obviously, the Latrobe part was important to him. What does it say that he never left Latrobe? I know he had his home in Orlando, and he and Walt Disney did more for Orlando than any two people on the planet, between the Winnie Palmer Children's Hospital, Bay Hill, Golf Channel, and so forth. I mean, he and Walt Disney did more than anybody down there. But what does it say that he never relinquished the Latrobe roots and continued to live there?
I think it obviously says that that part of the world was important to him. I think it obviously is a testament to how he was brought up and what you know, his father's job and what his father taught him at Latrobe Country Club meant something to him. And, you know, very few sports stars, Steve, die in the place that they grew up. Well, Arnold Palmer, you know, when he died on Sunday night, it was in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh's Latrobe is obviously a suburb of Pittsburgh. I mean, it's 40 or 50 miles away, but I still consider it suburban Pittsburgh, and I think a lot of other people do. And that's also another thing that, you know, is remarkable about him, is that he just kept on. It's not even that he kept coming back to Latrobe. Really, he never left Latrobe. And, you know, I would think that stability probably helped him over the course of his playing career. You know, when things were difficult on the tour or maybe not going his way, he knew that he had a solace. He knew he could go back to Latrobe and just be Arnold Palmer, you know, the kid who grew up in Latrobe, and not have people bug him and ask him questions about why things aren't going well. And it's something I think we all strive for in life, is to find that happy place where you feel comfortable. And obviously Latrobe Country Club was that place for Arnold Palmer.
I want to get to the Ryder Cup. It's going to be at Hazeltine. And when they played the U.S. Open at Hazeltine a long time ago in 1970, they've played others since. The PGA and the U.S. Open have both been there. I remember several players commenting that it was just a pasture. In the 40-plus years it's been out there, now almost 50 years, how has Hazeltine matured as a golf course that's going to make the Ryder Cup interesting to watch?
There may not be a golf course in the United States, at least a big-time golf course, Steve, that's gone through more changes than Hazeltine has since its first U.S. Open. That was obviously a rough moment for the founders of that club, who obviously had a lot of pride in it and wanted to bring something huge to the Minneapolis area. And, you know, Dave Hill's the one that made the strong comments about the course. There were others that did after that U.S. Open, but Dave Hills are the ones that are obviously memorized. And, you know, I think there it just shows what can happen when people work together and take feedback and not take things personally. Obviously, having deep pocketbooks like the Hazeltine founders and membership do helps you make the changes to make your golf course better. And now when you think about the 100 best golf courses in the country, Hazeltine's always in that conversation, not just because of its major championship history, because of the changes that have been made. And obviously the conditioning of the course is phenomenal, and it's a great setting. And really, Hazeltine is a continuation of a lot of great courses in the Minneapolis area. I mean, Minnetonka Country Club hosted a major championship, and so did Interlochen. And basically what happened was those two courses became obsolete by the late 60s and 70s because of how golfers were hitting the ball, and the people in that area that cared about golf and wanted to bring tournaments there wanted something more challenging for the players. And at first, maybe it was too challenging. Robert Trent Jones Sr. did the initial layout, and it was absolutely brutal. And, you know, like you mentioned when you asked this question, there are a lot of horror stories about the early days of Hazeltine. But it maybe has come as far as any United States championship golf course in the last 46 years. And what its owners set out to do, to bring big-time golf to the Minneapolis area when some of the other courses were obsolete, obviously that mission's been continued. And it really, in golf, doesn't get much bigger than the Ryder Cup. Over 500 million people are going to be watching this event on TV this weekend, which is just a startling number when you think about it.
We mentioned Arnold Palmer earlier, who played in a long string of Ryder Cups and won. Phil Mickelson's played in a long string of Ryder Cups as well. He made some interesting comments after the Tour Championship in Atlanta, saying that when the Ryder Cup is played in Europe, the European Tour sets up the previous week or, you know, 2 weeks early event very similar to what the Ryder Cup is going to be like. He said the Tour Championship didn't do that, and he was not happy about it. Does he have a point?
He absolutely does not have a point. He needs to, for the good of the United States team and for the good of his image and what people think of Phil Mickelson 10, 15, 20 years from now. We just talked about how beloved Arnold Palmer was well after his playing career. Phil Mickelson just needs to stop saying these things. He made a complete mockery out of the situation 2 years ago with some of his comments about Tom Watson and the team after what happened over at Glen Eagles in Europe. And, you know, it's really not a good sign for the American team that its most experienced player was griping and whining during the Tour Championship. I mean, these guys play on golf courses, Steve, that are set up different every single week. I don't know why it's a big deal for Phil Mickelson to play Eastlake and then go to the Hazeltine. He's been, you know, making those types of jumps from one course to the other throughout the course of his career. I mean, heck, Phil Mickelson's a guy in his Rancho Santa Fe, California home, has different varieties of grass that he can practice putting on the week before that tournament. So, for example, he would have a bent grass green going before he goes to Augusta and then have Bermuda grass greens going before he goes to some of the Florida tournaments. So this is a guy that, you know, is used to jumping from course to course. And really that doesn't help the confidence of the team or the spirit of the team or the cohesiveness of the team when he's making comments like that, you know, less than a week before the tournament begins. There's absolutely nothing good that can come from his complaining. And really he just needs to, especially when it comes to the Ryder Cup, just shut up and play golf, because some of the younger guys on the team do follow the older players. And he's obviously at 46 years old, the oldest guy on that team. And there's absolutely nothing good that can become of those statements, and I'm sure the European players were snickering at those in the background. There's been a lot of bulletin board material already. I mean, Davis Love III, I think, said last Friday that the U.S. Ryder Cup team is the best team ever assembled for a Ryder Cup. And if you look at some of the Ryder Cup records of the veterans on the American team, which I believe 10 of the 12 players have Ryder Cup experience, right, and you add up their cumulative Ryder Cup record, it's well below 500. So yeah, who knows what he's talking about.
Which then brings me to my final question before I let you go, Guy. When you look at the makeup of what Darren Clark has and the makeup of what Davis Love III has, what's your opinion of the makeup of the two teams going into this one?
They're completely different. The European team is a fairly young and inexperienced team in some ways. I mean, they have six Ryder Cup rookies. Willett, Fitzpatrick, Sullivan, Peters, Cabrera-Bayo, and Wood are all going to be playing in the first Ryder Cup. However, they also have six people that have had a lot of Ryder Cup success in Garcia, Rose, Stenson, McIlroy, Keimer, and Westwood. So there's a nice complement of players there, you know, new emerging European players that have had success in the last 2 years, and especially in the last 6 or 7 months, and players that know how to get it done in a Ryder Cup situation. You look at the American team, like I said, they're 10 players with experience, and very few of them have, you know, significant winning experience. And really, there are only two rookies on the American team, Brooks Koepka and Ryan Moore, and those are two players that have had nice summers and maybe have some momentum going to the Ryder Cup. So the teams really couldn't be more opposite if you look at it. And Darren Clark and Davis Love III obviously couldn't be more opposite personalities as captains. You know, Davis Love III is kind of an introvert, keeps very, very quiet. That's why it was really surprising he said what he said last Friday. That's very Davis Love III like. He's usually pretty scripted and bland, whereas Darren Clark is an extroverted person who you know, says what he believes in the moment and isn't scripted at all. So these are two completely different teams, and it's going to be a fascinating 3 days at Hazeltine. And you have to wonder if there's going to be an Arnold Palmer effect in this Ryder Cup. I mean, obviously he maybe impacted American golf as much as anybody, maybe besides Tiger Woods. That's a debate we can have for a different day. But he also had a great impact on European golf too, Steve, when he went over and played the British Open in 1960 and kept playing it. That really raised the prominence of the sport across the pond. And, you know, you look at it, and we're two generations removed from that, and there are just so many good European players coming along, and really every nation in Europe now has some type of professional golfer competing on the European Tour, and it makes you wonder if any of that would happen if Arnold Palmer had not decided to play the British Open in the 1960s.
Right, and he won it twice, and he probably resurrected the prominence of it again in the consciousness of this country just by being there. So, hey, Guy, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, as always. Great stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Steve, and say hello to everyone in State College for me, and enjoy the rest of your football season. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Guy. Appreciate it. Next half hour, Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com on recruiting. Jerry Dulac, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on Arnold Palmer and the Steelers' final half hour. Coming up, our play-by-play call of the day as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Imagine feeling the raw power of a 400-horsepower twin-turbo V6 and match that with all-wheel drive and the ultimate in comfort and technology. Experience the zen-like feeling for yourself. Stop by our showroom and experience this incredible American luxury vehicle, the new 2017 Lincoln MKZ. It's more than a car, it's an experience. Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury is waiting for you to come and experience the complete lineup of Lincoln luxury vehicles. Sunbury Motors is making that luxury an affordable reality with 0% financing for 60 months and $1,000 cash back on 2016 Lincoln MKX, and 0% financing for 60 months and $3,500 cash back on 2016 MKZ hybrids. Comfort, performance, style, and luxury are all made affordable at the Susquehanna Valley's home for affordable American luxury, Sunbury Motors Lincoln. Check out our inventory online at sunburylincoln.com or visit us today in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury.
All right, next half hour, we're going to have Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com. Then final half hour, Jerry Dulac will join us for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette after his incredible Arnold Palmer article today, which we appreciate. And then we'll depress him and ask him about the Steelers. Yeah. The Redskins won 29-27. So much for that revamped Giants defense. Penn State football, obviously a lot to talk there. The linebackers, it's going to be Jake Cooper, Manny Bowen, Cam Brown this week. Brandon Smith is not allowed to come back until the second half of the game against Minnesota. Minnesota runs the football. Big offensive line, not a mobile group, but really good straight ahead. They have a station-to-station passing game led by Drew Walutarski. They're only averaging 3.1 yards after the catch. Quarterback Mitch Leidner is very good. I think he's very good. And defensively, they got a couple guys out. Carter Coughlin out. Devers, the defensive end, who had three tackles for losses, three sacks, and three forced fumbles against Colorado State, got hurt, can't play. So it's an interesting mix on Saturday. And weather-wise, it's interesting. There's one hole in the rain from 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock on Saturday. How about that? Not bad. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.